Welcome to Bragtown Broadcast News for Friday, August 11th, 2023. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. And we start off with some breaking news about Karen Kingston putting out a video claiming that she is being hunted to be assassinated by the CIA, and that she's apparently in Mexico, and she believes that Dr. Robert Malone, she says, has put out the hit on her to have her killed. And in this video, she specifically asked Mickey Willis and myself by name, Mike Adams, she's asking me to ask Dr. Malone to call off the assassination. And then what happened is that Brian Shilhavy, who's the editor of Health Impact News, which is a great website, by the way, they have a lot of good content on that website. He put out a story with the following headline, but it has an incorrect paragraph in it that gets something really important very wrong that I'll mention. I already sent a correction request to Brian. I'm sure he'll correct it. But the headline is whistleblower Karen Kingston flees the U.S. claiming Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s advisor, Dr. Robert Malone, ordered a CIA assassination of her. Okay, so that's by Brian Shilhavy, Health Impact News. And then Karen Kingston has put out this video, and I want to play just a little bit of the intro for you here, about a minute or so, so you get the flavor of this. Apparently she's in Mexico and has put out this video. I've tried to reach her, by the way, on Signal after seeing this, and so far I don't have any response from Karen, but check out this video.
I am being hunted down right now, like an animal, for telling the truth, for giving people documentation so that they can protect their communities and protect their children. And that's why the government, it wants me dead. You know, and also because I criticized Dr. Malone. That's why the government wants me dead. And this was made very clear to me by Ernest Luke. Again, his last name is L-U-Q-E. He's in charge of Alpha Security. He worked for the FBI and the Pentagon. He said there's a huge file on me. I guess their number one target right now. I don't know why there isn't a sense of urgency to remove these. I don't know why RFK Jr. isn't saying, yes, Pfizer acted criminally. You should seize these shots. The sheriffs have the authority to do it. Every community should do it. If Dr. Malone is on our side, that's what he should say too. He says he wants these removed from the community, then say, hey, Karen Kingston put together a letter to the sheriffs. They can remove these from your community. But no, what does Robert Malone say? He says that Pfizer's above all international laws for biowarfare. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. And you want to know when he said it? He said at the end of the Project Veritas video.
All right. So that's those are the allegations from Karen. Again, for whatever reason, it's not clear in this video, and she hasn't responded to me yet. But for whatever reason, she believes that Dr. Robert Malone has somehow put out a hit on her. Now, I'm going to get to a little more analysis of this. And I just want to be clear that I don't think Robert Malone put out a hit on Karen Kingston. But I do think somebody else is trying to take her out. I have no doubt about that. So that's... I mean, look, Karen Kingston has been a whistleblower who has exposed a lot of things. And in fact, about 90 days ago, actually less than that, it was, May 23rd, Brighton Broadcast News. I interviewed Karen Kingston. I interviewed her, and that was at a time when she was saying that she was being blacklisted by a lot of alternative media. By the way, I think she said that in the interview. And she was wondering, you know, if I would have her on to talk about this call for the sheriffs to seize the vaccine bioweapons across the United States. And I said, well, absolutely, I'll have you on to talk about that. And so I did an interview with her. And in fact, if you want to find that, all you got to do is go to my Health Ranger Report channel on Brighttown.com and search either for May 23rd or just the name Karen Kingston under my channel, and you'll see the May 23rd episode of Brighttown Broadcast News. And the title is Calling on Law Enforcement to Seize All Vaccine Bioweapons in the USA featuring Karen Kingston. Okay, so just to be clear, yes, Karen Kingston called for this, called for the bioweapons to be seized less than 3 months ago. She wanted to come on my show and do an interview and expose all of this and lay it out. And I said, absolutely, we'll have you on. I interviewed her, unedited, no censorship. That entire interview, I don't think there's a single edit other than maybe if there was a cough or something like that, or if there was a glitch of some kind, but no editing, uncensored. And then I put that out again, May 23rd. And since then, I had not had any contact with Karen. And the last time I had any contact with Robert Malone, by the way, was I think the last time I interviewed him, which let me look that up on my channel. Dr. Robert Malone. Oh, here it is. 8 months ago, Dr. Robert Malone and Mike Adams discuss decentralization and the rise of sustainable civilization. And gosh, I can't believe that's already been 8 months. And as I recall, by the way, that was a really great conversation with Dr. Robert Malone. And one of the things that I remember about that conversation is that neither one of us really wanted to talk about vaccines that much. And we didn't. Because frankly, we're all sick of talking about vaccines. And so in that discussion, Dr. Malone and I were talking about how we rebuild society after the collapse of the current system of long supply chains and, you know, centralized food production and global debt and all of this kind of stuff. And since Dr. Malone lives on a farm, I believe he raises horses. In fact, yeah, that's what he said. Show horses, I think. And I live on a ranch, and he and I both have, you know, tractors and equipment, and we have to feed animals, and we deal with animals a lot. And so we actually had a lot in common in terms of living out in the country and doing kind of semi off the grid, you know, farming type of operations. And that's kind of what we talked about there. There was an earlier interview. Let's see. When was this? There was an earlier interview that I did with him. And now I can't see it. No, or maybe it was that interview. Yeah, maybe it was that interview where the very first question I asked him, I think, was, are you working for the CIA? And then he answered that question, or, you know, he, because that criticism has been out there. Now, Karen Kingston, of course, as you heard in her own words, she believes that Dr. Malone is controlling at least certain elements of the CIA. And she believes that Dr. Malone has put out a hit on her. As I said, I don't think Dr. Malone is putting out hits on anybody, but I do think that there are powerful forces that are trying to kill Karen Kingston for sure. And those same forces have probably been trying to kill me for a long time too. And they've been trying to kill half the people who speak at the Clay Clark events, you know, Reawaken America tour. And I know some people who almost were killed with, I think, aerosolized bioweapons that were sprayed on them as they were attending such events to speak. So, yes, an element of what Karen is saying is absolutely true, that there are dark forces out there that are trying to hunt down and kill influential people who are blowing the whistle on this depopulation bioweapon agenda. I have no doubt that that's the case. That said, and this is, I'm speaking directly to Karen. Hopefully she'll hear this interview or podcast. But Karen, going to Mexico tactically is a bad decision. And you are much safer in the United States than to be outside the U.S. And the way I know this is because, of course, I lived in Ecuador for some time. And in Ecuador, I was targeted in an attempted extortion operation that failed because of some clever things that I was able to do. And I was not successfully extorted, but it is very easy. And by the way, Greg Caton was someone that I knew in Ecuador. And Greg Caton lived in a city that was quite a bit south of Quito. And the U.S. State Department dispatched a team to kidnap Greg Caton in his own driveway in the city where he lived, And then they took him. I mean, they literally kidnapped him, and they took him to the airport on the western edge of Ecuador. And now, for some reason, I'm forgetting the name of that city. And they put him on, I think it was an American Airlines flight, and they flew him back to the United States, all completely illegally outside the rule of law. And the reason I say this, and then they threw him in prison. And, you know, worse. I mean, they incarcerated him. And, you know, once again, we were one of the few media outlets that was willing to interview Greg Catan. And I interviewed him, you know, several times over the last few years before he passed away. And, you know, we helped his business and helped, you know, bring him publicity and helped get his message out. And he is dearly missed, by the way. Greg Catan was a very courageous soul and a real treasure for humanity. But he's no longer with us. But what I'm trying to say here to Karen is that you are, or any of us, are more vulnerable to the deep state or the CIA if we are outside the United States, because outside the U.S. is where the CIA actually has permission to operate, whereas domestically inside the USA, the CIA does not have legal permission to operate. In addition, when there are deaths inside the United States, there tends to be, like maybe assassination type of deaths, there tends to be a lot more investigation. You know, the evidence is more local. Local police or sheriffs get involved. The FBI might get involved. It's harder to cover up an assassination in the United States than it is to cover up an assassination in Mexico or Ecuador or anywhere else, frankly. So if you're thinking that you're safer in Mexico, and if you believe you're being hunted for assassination, I say, Karen, you are not safer in Mexico. You would probably be safer in the United States in an unknown location. That's just my take on it. And of course, I lived outside the U.S. and I no longer do that. And I do feel much safer in Texas than anywhere else that I could be in the world right now. But there's another factor that is important to acknowledge. And I'm just going to say this in a very raw, unedited way. And here it is. I don't know if I've ever said this clearly enough, but here it is. It's been made clear to me over the years that if you become an influential person who is uplifting, awakening, you know, informing people, and I'm definitely in the category of a strong influencer in that space, and Karen, with her research, she's an outstanding researcher, an analyst, and you know, she's got a very sharp mind in terms of looking at documents and finding patterns and so on. But if you start to cross that threshold of becoming an influential person who is convincing, where you could convince people who are kind of on the fence, and you could convince them that, yeah, oh my gosh, this is a bioweapon, or this is a depopulation agenda, or, you know, whatever. The Federal Reserve, you know, the fake fiat currency, all this. If you start to become convincing to people, the deep state has two ways to deal with you. Those two ways are, number one, they can kill you. Number two, they can censor you and take away your voice, to take away your influence. Now, I've been told that they chose option number two on me, and that's why they deplatformed me before almost anyone else. That's why my current reach is probably less than 1% of what it would be organically. That's why I'm specifically named by the White House in the discovery documents in the Missouri versus Biden lawsuit. You know, the one that the Gateway Pundit is part of and RFK Jr. is part of. I'm named. Brightown is named. Natural News is named. We're in the discovery documents. And other platforms are named, of course, the Gateway Pundit and Jim Hoft and so on. We're all specifically named as being targeted for takedowns. And by the way, that right there is, like, those are my credentials in alternative media. You know, if anybody were to ever say, oh my gosh, Mike Adams, he must work for the CIA. Guess what? I'm the one the CIA silenced. They silenced me. If they wanted me to have more influence, they wouldn't have deplatformed me from everything. YouTube, Facebook, Google, LinkedIn, you know, whatever, Vimeo, you know, you name it. I mean, I have some of the most solid credentials of alternative media of anybody in the world because I'm specifically named to be silenced by the government and the deep state, right? Along with, you know, people like Alex Jones and people like Jim Hoft and many others. So, again, they can either kill you or they can silence you. And today, killing people because of the internet, killing people is actually kind of risky for the deep state because killing people tends to attract more attention if those people are sufficiently famous or, you know, well known. So, for example, if they try to go kill Alex Jones, I mean, could they technically do it? Well, of course they could, or they could kill me if they really, really wanted to. They would find a way to do it. But is there going to be so much blowback because Alex Jones is well known, or because I'm well known, or in Karen Kingston's case, because she's well enough known, is there going to be so much blowback that the deep state makes a decision that, oh, maybe we shouldn't take that risk and, you know, having it, we don't want an investigation, we don't want blowback. So what they often end up doing is just option two, which is to just silence you. Now, in the case of InfoWars, they invoked really option three, which was extreme lawfare. But that's just a form of silencing you, you know, to sue you endlessly in the court system over, in his case, you know, Sandy Hook. So they just decided they're gonna sue Alex Jones into oblivion and force him to declare bankruptcy, which he did. I think Free Speech Systems is in Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which means that there's a court-appointed trust that runs the finances of the operation and decides, you know, to pay the salaries and whatever. And so that effort has slowed down InfoWars from growing, and that was the goal. In my case, I'm just censored everywhere. I'm so censored that even on Twitter, you can't share a Brighteon.com video link to this day. Did you know that? To this freaking day, you can't share a link on Twitter. Which is one reason why I don't fully trust Elon Musk, although to his credit, he did reinstate my personal account on Twitter, which is at HealthRanger, I think a couple of months ago. And I've been kind of tweeting out a few things here and there ever since. But I would rather have, you know, Brighteon reactivated on Twitter than my own personal account. I want other people to be able to share their videos on Twitter. That actually means more to me. But the point is, I've been hit with censorship. Alex has been hit with lawfare. And Karen Kingston, somebody apparently is trying to kill her. So I would say to Karen, get back to the United States. You'll be safer. And then get famous about this. So start spreading the word about you think that someone's trying to kill you. In fact, even though I don't believe Robert Malone is trying to kill Karen Kingston, but I would be happy to have Karen on as a guest and do an interview. And let's hear this out. You know, why, Karen, do you believe that someone's trying to kill you? Like, what evidence do you have? Or, you know, I'm not saying that you're making it up. I'm just saying in the video, you didn't really lay out what it is, but have there been close calls, you know, or did somebody leave a note, a threatening note or something? Or if you had friends and family members get threatened or, you know, what's actually going on behind the scenes that you want to share publicly? We should hear about that. Okay. So that's one thing. Now then, in this video that she posted, she also asks myself and Mickey Willis and I think Steve Kirsch by name to contact Dr. Malone and tell Dr. Malone to call off the assassination. Now, when I first heard this, I'm like, what? But I want you to hear her say that in her own words, so you know I'm not making this up. And it, you know, it took me by surprise because I don't, you know, I don't have any influence over assassination teams. I mean, what am I supposed to do? But listen to her say this in her own words and see what you think. Here we go.
you're tracked everywhere. So I came somewhere where I thought I was safe, but I'm not safe anywhere. People know where I am. Again, my room gets sprayed, my water gets contaminated, my food does as well. So, I don't know, Mickey Willis, if you're listening, Steve Kirsch, Mike Adams, you know, please talk to Dr. Robert Malone to call off the CIA. He's friends with them. Call off the CIA from hunting me down for the love of humanity. And I'd like to know who told the CIA to kill me.
All right, so there you hear her say it. She says, she's asking Mickey Willis, Steve Kirsch, and myself to contact Robert Malone and ask him to call off the assassination because, as she says, Robert Malone, she says, knows the CIA, or I guess implies is working with the CIA. And then she explains that she doesn't know who actually called for her to be assassinated, but that she most definitely feels that she has been named for assassination. So let me go through this. So Mickey Willis, yeah, I had Mickey Willis in studio a few weeks ago with JP Sears. He and JP, who have a business venture together now, and they came to my studio in Texas, and we had a fun time with the life jackets, if you saw that, because JP Sears, you know, is quite a comedian, and talked to Mickey then. Nothing came up in that conversation about anything about Karen Kingston or CIA or assassinations or anything like that. Steve Kirsch, it's been a while since I've talked with Steve Kirsch. I should probably reach out to him and see what's up and maybe get him on, but maybe over a year and a half or something, Steve Kirsch. So, and again, Robert Malone, as I'm checking my files here, or, you know, my videos, it's been about 8 months since I interviewed Robert Malone, and I haven't spoken with Robert Malone since that interview. That was the last time I spoke with him. So then, adding to the confusion is, and this is where the correction comes in, where I've requested Health Impact News to correct this paragraph. But Brian writes, he says, what is especially concerning to me in the video above is her statement that many people in the alternative media have reportedly contacted her and tried to get her to stop criticizing Dr. Malone, including film producer Mickey Willis, Children's Health Defense, and Mike Adams of Natural News. So I don't know if that's a typo, if that's a mistake, but I asked Brian to correct that because, as she says, you just heard her say it, she's not saying that I asked her to stop criticizing Dr. Malone. She's asking me to contact Malone to call off the assassination. So I'm not sure how there's any confusion in any of that. I mean, I don't know, unless she says something later on. But look, when I become aware of issues that are happening in the health freedom movement, as I call it, I became aware of Dr. Malone suing Dr. Jane Ruby, and I believe Karen Kingston, I think she's in the lawsuit as well, and also the, what's it called? Is it Red? It's the Stu Peters, the platform that carried Stu Peters. I don't think Stu Peters himself is named. In fact, I'm sure he's not, but the platform that was, I think Red Voice Media, I think that's what it is. I think Red Voice Media is named in this Dr. Robert Malone lawsuit, which is, I think it's a civil suit that, I don't know all the details of it, but I believe the lawsuit claims that these individuals, Karen Kingston and Dr. Jane Ruby, and apparently someone on Red Voice Media, maybe Stu himself, I'm not sure, at least the lawsuit claims that they defamed Dr. Malone by characterizing him as a murderer or a killer or something like that. Now, yeah, this lawsuit's public, by the way. I'm pretty sure it's public. And I know Dr. Jane Ruby has spoken about it quite extensively. And from what I can tell, this lawsuit is probably not going to go anywhere, but it's going to require a lot of expenditure of time and money on the part of the people named in the lawsuit, which, again, I know Dr. Jane Ruby is named. I think Karen Kingston is named, but I'm not 100% on that. I have to check. But regardless of who's named, the defendants are going to have to spend, of course, time and money, you know, to defend themselves against this. And when these things crop up in the health freedom movement, I do try to help people resolve issues like this that I think are bad for the movement itself. Not that I'm any official, you know, leader of the movement. I'm not. I'm just another participant. But when I became aware of this, I did call Karen Kingston to ask, like, what's this all about? What's going on? What is this? And she, and I forgot when this was. It was maybe more than a year ago. And she explained to me what was going on. And I was like, is there any way that this can be resolved? You know, is there any, how does this problem get solved? Or where does it go from here? And I forget all the details, but I invited her on for an interview. And then we did an interview. And so in that whole process, never did I tell Karen Kingston, you know, what to say or not to say or who to criticize or not to criticize. I am, though, someone who tries to find constructive solutions. And I would still like to see this whole issue resolved because I think it's a horrible distraction from, you know, the truth that, frankly, Steve Kirsch is nailing quite effectively, which is that these vaccines are killing people. You know, I think Steve Kirsch has done some really outstanding work. And also Ed Dowd has done really outstanding work. And so has Karen Kingston in her own way, you know, looking at the patents and so on. And she's done some great work as well. And, you know, frankly, Dr. Robert Malone has demonstrated a lot of courage to blow the whistle on technology that he helped invent. You know, he could have stayed silent. He didn't have to speak out and make himself an enemy of the establishment or of the science establishment anyway. So I feel like of all these people, you know, everybody's contributed in different ways, including Mickey Willis, you know, with the Plandemic series, and frankly, J.P. Sears with his, you know, comedy routines that are expressing satire against the lunacy of the science and all of that. And so, you know, people have contributed in lots of different ways. And yet then we find ourselves in this conflict that as of right now has apparently gotten to some kind of crazy level where Karen Kingston believes that Robert Malone has put out a hit on her. And she is asking myself and Mickey Willis and Children's Health Defense, apparently, or Steve Kirsch to contact Dr. Malone and call off the hit. So, I certainly would always call off the hit. So if any assassin is listening out there, and if you would listen to me, just I don't know why you would, but if you're an assassin and you're hunting Karen or anybody else in this movement, please stop. Don't kill people. Don't kill people. It's not good. Some of us are capable of, you know, shooting back, by the way. And, you know, you notice I have a highly trained, military dog. That's not a coincidence, folks. And you notice that, you know, I'm armed all the time. Not a coincidence. And it's not paranoia. It's, practical. It's practical. And so, you know, it's good to have multiple layers of defense, including ones that you don't talk about publicly. So that if people try things, then they, oh, surprise, you didn't know about that one, did you? Yeah, right, exactly. So it's good to be hard to kill. Although, again, if you are being effective enough, the establishment, the deep state, they can always find some way to kill you. Just like they killed JFK in 63. And I just interviewed, by the way, Dick Russell, the author of several books about that. He's also the author of The Real RFK Jr. So just interviewed Dick Russell. We had a great conversation about that. But the deep state can find a way to kill you if you're so powerful that you threaten their existence. And JFK wanted to shut down essentially what we would call the deep state, the military-industrial complex, the war machine. He wanted to shut that down. That's one of the reasons they took him out, by the way. So there's a very real risk for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. today that if he wins the Democrat nomination, which I hope he does, that he would also be subjected to a very determined CIA assassination attempt. And I know I said previously that the CIA is not authorized to operate in the United States, but when it comes to assassinating Kennedys, they don't care. They'll operate anywhere they have to. But they won't go that far for people that aren't an existential threat to the deep state. Like myself, for example. You know, I don't have the power to run for president and defund the deep state. Like, I'm no threat to the CIA, right? I'm no threat to that whole system. They know that. So they don't kill me. Instead, they just censor me. And so I'm allowed to reach, you know, 1% of the audience that I normally would. And then they just move on and try to attack, you know, RFK and everybody else. So that's kind of how the game works. And by the way, in this video, Karen also is wondering about Children's Health Defense. And she's I think she says, is CHD like a captured agency? I mean, it's a, you know, it's a nonprofit that was founded by, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And she says a lot of very nice things, by the way, about RFK and also about myself and Mickey Willis and so on. And she kind of apologizes to RFK if anything was, you know, she wasn't trying to offend him in any way. I think she's an admirer of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and RFK's courage in speaking out about Fauci. And as am I. I admire RFK Jr. and his courage and his voice and so on. I would just say, Karen, you need to get out of Mexico. You need to reach out to me if you really want to be safe, because I have a lot of experience of avoiding being you know, killed or extorted or entrapped or what have you. And I know a lot of people I've trained with, you know, former Navy SEALs, former U.S. Army intelligence, you know, former high-level people who know how things roll and who are fans of America and fans of my work, and people who tactical operators who some of whom are active duty right now. And if you really need protection and you need a safe house situation, contact me, because I know people who can keep you safe. I know a lot of people who can keep you really freaking safe, if that's, you know, if that's what you want to do. But it's not outside of the United States, because it's very dangerous. And frankly, any operator will tell you that. If you step outside the U.S., then you immediately become a lot easier for the CIA to take out. And then the other thing I would mention is, I don't know how to say this delicately, you know, not everybody is going to agree with every assessment that Karen offers. You know, like, she did this interview with RFK Jr. and then with Children's Health Defense, and I think that interview was never aired. That's what she was explaining in the video. Well, it doesn't mean that Children's Health Defense is evil or that RFK is holding out or anything. It simply might mean that they haven't reached the same conclusion on everything. That's a possibility. And it, you know, doesn't mean that CHD is bad or RFK is bad. It's just that sometimes people are different places in their understanding of what's going on. Sometimes it takes more time for people to come to realizations. And, you know, Karen tends to be ahead of the curve on the research. And frankly, you know, she's ahead of me on the research of what's actually in the jabs. And so if she called me up and said, oh, I found the documents that this and this and this is in the jabs, you know, at first I might be taken aback. Like, what? How could that even be? It might take me a while to come to terms with what she's saying. And I sense from Karen a little bit of impatience sometimes about, like, how come everybody else isn't up to speed, you know, like she is. And I gotta say, Karen, it's, you know, it's because you're a really strong researcher and you are steeped in this more than most people, and you are ahead of what everybody else is, the knowledge base that's out there. And so not everybody's going to get it instantly, not even me or Mickey Willis or whoever else. It's going to take time, and, you know, to keep publicizing this and talking about it and exposing it and showing the documents. It's going to take time for this to seep in. It's not an instant thing. So I would just say, we can help you with that, Karen. You can come on, you can present the evidence of what your findings are. I disagree with the characterization of thinking that Robert Malone himself is working for the CIA and calling an assassination job on you. I very much doubt that's the case, but I'm happy to have you on, Karen, to talk about the evidence that you're finding, what you think it has gotten you on some kind of a hit list, because I have no doubt you are being hunted by somebody. No doubt in my mind that that's true. So your intuition is correct on that matter. And clearly you've stumbled onto something really critical that is freaking out somebody in a very powerful position. I mean, that's all true. I don't think Robert Malone is that person. I think it's somebody, some super active CIA maybe, or who knows what agency, or somebody, some high level pharma black ops group or something, who knows. But somebody definitely wants Karen Kingston silenced. And I'll do everything I can to help you, Karen, to help you stay safe and help you get your message out. And to even help negotiate solutions if that's ever possible. I certainly wish that, I wish that you, Karen, and Dr. Jane Ruby and Robert Malone could all see eye to eye and resolve your issues and, you know, lay it all to rest. And I should reach out to Jane Ruby on this too and just see if she's got anything to add to this conversation. I haven't spoken with her in a while, but I hate to see all the accusations and all the distractions and so on. It's painful for all of us to watch. And also, I really want to pray for Karen's safety. She's been frazzled in some way, perhaps beyond anything that she said in the video or beyond anything that she's written on Substack. I suspect something else. She's observed something that has her rattled. And I don't know enough about Karen to know if she's ever been in situations where she was being hunted before. That's not a situation that most people are used to, and it can freak people out. And I just don't know, but clearly something has her freaked out, and I'm concerned, and I want to help resolve it, and I want to help get the truth out. So that's my assessment of this. Just kind of laying it out there for you. And Karen, if you're hearing this, you can reach me. You know how to reach me. Reach out. I'll do an emergency interview with you even this weekend, and we'll get it out. You know, I'll make an exception. I'll clear my schedule. We'll get you in, and we'll do an interview. And if Robert Malone is listening, if you want to chime in, you know, I doubt it. I don't know what to say. You know, you're being accused of running an assassination squad, I guess. That's, how do you handle an accusation like that? It's, you know, it's kind of like, what can you say? It's like, no, I'm not running an assassination squad. It's kind of an impossible accusation to answer, but the door is open. If you want to chime in, you have that opportunity here on my show and on naturalnews.com, etc. Let me add one more thing here. I this is just about RFK Jr. I think that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. would make an excellent president, and I'm rooting for him to get the Democrat nomination. I'm rooting for Trump to get the Republican nomination, by the way. And I think that if we end up with Kennedy and Trump as the two nominees, then we win in either case. America would do well to have either one of those men in the Oval Office. Bobby Kennedy has a deeper understanding, of course, of the malfeasance in the science circles. I mean, he literally wrote the book on Anthony Fauci. And Bobby Kennedy understands the NIH and the National Science Foundation and the CDC and all the nefarious, horrible things that go on there, and the FDA, and he understands heavy metals pollution and poisoning, mercury poisoning and things like that. I don't agree with Bobby Kennedy on every single thing, but nevertheless, I believe Bobby Kennedy is an authentic, he's a genuine, courageous, patriotic American. And whatever is happening at CHD, Children's Health Defense, whether someone criticizes CHD or not, or fundraising this, fundraising that, hey, to me, that's all secondary to the fact that Bobby Kennedy Jr. would make an excellent president. And he deserves our support. He's put his neck on the line. And if anybody should be concerned about being assassinated, it should be Bobby Kennedy. Speaking of the topic, I know Karen is saying that she's being targeted, and perhaps that's quite true. I suspect it is true. But when it comes to Bobby Kennedy, we don't have to wonder. We know it's true. We know he's being targeted. If he gets, look, Joe Biden won't even approve Secret Service protection for RFK Jr. It's almost like they want him to be killed. They don't want him to be safe. So there's a lot at play here, folks. Situation's pretty dire across the board. And we are living through, as I've said numerous times, we're living through a depopulation genocide bioweapons event. And that biological weapon originated with the U.S. Department of Defense, funded by taxpayer money, which is something that, frankly, JFK spoke out against with a great degree of personal risk to himself, as we now know what happened. So maybe Karen Kingston has angered the DOD. Maybe this is a military operation that's hunting her down. You ever thought about that? And if that's the case, Karen should get her butt back to the U.S. as soon as possible. Again, get out of Mexico, get out of other countries, get into the USA where the military is not supposed to be, running those kinds of ops. At least that's my advice. I think you're safer in the U.S. And there's ways to be really, really safe and really off the grid in the United States if that's your desire. Now, there's some other news I got to mention here. You notice how the food facilities have been burning down lately, and there was a big grain elevator explosion. What was that? Was that in Turkey the other day? Now there's been a fire in France. Grain elevators are on fire in a port called La Rochelle on the Atlantic coast of France. This port is reportedly one of the largest grain export terminals in the country. Apparently, 70 firefighters were dispatched to try to put out the fire in this grain elevator, and there are online videos and images and so on. Maybe not one that I can play for you here, but if you search for La Rochelle grain elevator fire, you will find it, you will see it. So, another week, another grain elevator burning down. Another major grain export hub on fire. What's going on here, folks? This is engineered famine. So, kind of getting back to Karen Kingston, she's talking about the depopulation bioweapon. She's got the patents, she's got the documents, and she's right that there's a weaponized military effort perhaps the U.S. DOD effort to mass murder billions of human beings through biological weapons that have been, of course, morphed into the vaccines. But there's also another effort to murder billions of people, potentially, if they can get away with it, through famine, and that's by burning down the food infrastructure of our world. And that is happening every day. We're reporting on it constantly. I was reaching out to David Dubine, by the way, Adapt 2030. We're going to get David Dubine on shortly with updates on what's happening with the, you know, the crop failures, which are engineered, the droughts, the floods. We've also got Dane Wigington coming on again soon, Geoengineering Watch, and so on. Look, all these people are telling the truth. There is a global depopulation effort. You know, Karen is correct about the bioweapons. David Dubine's correct about the alterations of the atmosphere and the crop failures. You know, Dane Wigington is correct about geoengineering and engineered droughts and floods and crop failures. And the people I have on as guests, they always have points of fact where they are correct. They are absolutely right. And if you layer all these together, you realize that the human population on planet Earth is under attack from so many vectors simultaneously. It's truly insane. And we're just about to hit the tipping point of another wave of mass deaths. And, you know, it's not just the vaccines, which Steve Kirsch is saying through VAERS data are killing, you know, one out of 1,000. Every 1,000 shots, one person is now dead. That's one out of 1,000. That's nothing compared to what's coming. Maybe with the next plandemic, you know, and Mickey Willis is working on another film, by the way. But there's probably another plandemic coming. There's definitely more food shortages coming, more famine, more starvation, no doubt. There are power grid failures that are coming. In fact, oh man, where's this article? I got to get it to you. This story comes from dailycaller.com. EPA's new climate rule would cause rolling blackouts in huge swath of America, analysis finds. So the proposed EPA regulations for power plant emissions would spur blackouts in the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator that's called MISO, M-I-S-O, MISO. Oh, MISO, sorry, you have no power. It's the power grid region called MISO, and it would cost stakeholders nearly $250 billion in the coming decades, according to comments filed in response to the new rule by the Center of the American Experiment, the CAE. So they did a cost analysis. And they say that the EPA has wildly overestimated the efficiency of wind and solar power, exposing 45 million people living in the area served by MISO to elevated blackout risks. So they're saying, quote, the EPA does not appear to have the expertise necessary to enact such a sweeping regulation on the American power sector. In other words, the EPA is engineering blackouts. The EPA is taking down the power grid across America, which is a topic that, of course, I've covered here on this podcast quite extensively. The EPA deliberately is engineering blackouts to thrust America into a third world existence. At the same time, you know, somebody's blown up the grain elevators. You know, somebody's also setting fire to fossil fuel refineries and gas export hubs every once in a while. You know, another giant explosion happens. There are demo teams, like demolition teams. Now, this is something that maybe Karen is getting a sense of. There are demo teams that operate internationally. And I believe these are probably former special forces guys. And they're dropped into a country and they're told, go sabotage this, you know, whatever the target is. Go sabotage this refinery. Go sabotage this grain elevator. Go sabotage the transportation. You know, go sabotage this ammo depot or something. Special Forces guys, and I mean, I know lots of them, but you know one, Michael Yon. Michael Yon, former Special Forces guy, right? And he'll tell you, it's easier to burn things down than to blow them up. And that was part of their training, was to learn how to burn things down. And so right now, probably, maybe it's through you know, DHS, maybe State Department, maybe it's a DOD op. I don't know who's running it. But there are teams that are running around the U.S. and all over the world, and their job is to tear down infrastructure so that they can accelerate the economic implosion of America and accelerate mass famine and accelerate global depopulation. That is 100% going on. And you know, maybe one of those teams is also told, and go try to kill Karen Kingston, too. Who knows? But again, Karen, get out of Mexico, because they can... It's very easy for these teams to find any of us in Mexico. Especially if you're not Mexican-looking, by the way. It's another thing I learned living in Ecuador. Wherever you're going to be, try to fit in, like, physically and with how you dress. You don't want to appear as the gringo or the tourist or the person who stands out. You want to do a gray man type of operation. You want to fit in. You want to blend in wherever you are. So, you know, Karen would be safer in like Boulder, Colorado, or somewhere like that, where there's a lot of people who have the same kind of complexion and, you know, skin tone and hair color and you know, all that. So I'm just offering this as constructive suggestions with a sense of trying to help Karen find safety, because there are black ops teams that are running around destroying things, and they might be killing some people too. I don't know, and I certainly don't have any command authority over these teams. Might be fun to imagine that you know, if you could make a phone call and like, oh yeah, and by the way, you know, knock off this person. I mean, I guess, you know, if you're playing James Bond in some kind of fantasy or something, but in reality, those kinds of commands probably only come from, I would imagine, like the very highest levels of the regime, frankly. I mean, it's probably only 5 or 6 people in the country who could order such a thing. To assassinate an American citizen? I mean, think about it. You know, when Hillary Clinton was trying to assassinate Julian Assange, you know, what was her position? Secretary of State, right? So, yeah, maybe Secretary of State could do it. Maybe Mayorkas could do it, Homeland Security. Maybe Biden could call for it if he knew what day it was. There's not too many people that can order the assassination of an American citizen. And I don't know who those people are. But I know that the people in charge of this country right now are not working for America. They are working to destroy America. No question about that. They're probably, I mean, the Bidens are working for communist China. You know, that's clear. And there's a bunch of people just working for themselves, just collecting money off all the money to Ukraine, that whole thing. So that's my take on things, folks. That's my take. I know it's kind of raw, unedited, just stream of consciousness here. I want you to understand where I'm coming from on this is a place of, you know, I want the truth to get out. I want people to be safe. I want compassion. You know, I want to save lives. I want to stop the genocide. I mean, that's where I'm coming from every day. That's where I've been coming from for 20 years that I've been doing this. You know, I started doing this in 2003. 2 decades, folks, I've been doing this. You know, I didn't just come along here in COVID. I'm not just 2 years in this. I'm 20 years into this. I've seen everything, every crazy thing. I've heard every crazy story. I've been threatened. I've survived. I've taken steps. There's a lot that I'll probably never be able to tell you. That things that have occurred that have been mind-blowing. But I'm still here, and I intend to be here, and I intend to do my part to help humanity survive this. Because I know a collapse is coming, an economic collapse, a geopolitical collapse, certainly a power grid collapse, that's being engineered. I know a collapse is coming. And I know we're going to lose billions of people on this planet. That's already begun. It's underway, okay? We're not going to have 8 billion people left. I can guarantee you that's the case. We're going to lose, I think, between 1 and 4 billion people. And I've been called an optimist by some of the people I interview when I say that. They're like, That's optimistic. You what? You think we're going to end up with 50% or more of the population? Ha ha ha. That's impossible. That's what they say. All right. But whatever the number is, whatever is left, it's people like you and I who get to rebuild the future of human civilization. And we earn that right to rebuild if we survive this, if we survive the kill switch, if we survive the assassinations, we survive the takedown of the food infrastructure, we survive the takedown of the economy and the power grid and the violence in the cities and all the nonsense and maybe nuclear weapons and world war. If we survive all that, we earn the right to shape the future of human civilization. And frankly, I plan to be here to participate in that. And I plan to help as many people as I can to also be here to continue to participate in that. And we need whistleblowers like Karen Kingston. That's why I pray for her safety and want to offer her help for her safety. We need whistleblowers like that because we also need, as all of this happens, we need to be able to tell the true stories for the sake of history of what we went through. How we were threatened, how we were silenced. We need to be able to reshape not just the future of human civilization, but the records of what happened so that future generations can know the truth. And Karen Kingston has a lot to testify about the truth of what's happened, you see? So that's why we need to give people like her a platform and help her stay safe. Okay, that's my take on things, and we're going to jump into an interview now. Actually, I'm going to do the interview with Dick Russell, who's the author of books on JFK and his assassination, because I think it actually fits with this topic today. So we're going to play that for you now, the interview with Dick Russell, who's also the author of The Real JFK, or I'm sorry, The Real RFK Jr., Robert F. Kennedy Jr., that's his most recent book. And this is a fascinating conversation. It's about 30 minutes, and I think you'll find it very interesting. So give this a listen, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Today's interview is brought to you by HealthRangerStore.com and our wide variety of storable food and really high nutrition products. I've got some on my desk, some of my favorites. The one in the center there is coconut milk powder, which is really super delicious. It's mineral-rich, and it adds a fatty, creamy, luscious, delicious taste to lots of recipes, including smoothies. We've got quinoa there on the right, which, of course, is a gluten-free. It's kind of a grain. It's not technically a grain, but people use it like a grain. It's really delicious in a lot of recipes. Very high in protein. And I remember eating this when I was hiking in the Andes Mountains. And the local people who helped us, they would bring quinoa and eggs, and they would just get water from the mountain streams, and they would boil the quinoa and eggs, and we would have quinoa egg soup right there on the trail outside of our camping tents. That's on the way. I was hiking to Machu Picchu at that time, and we did the long hike, not the bus ride. It was hiking over the Andes Mountains up to 14,000 feet and back down, and we were powered by quinoa. Okay, then we've also got goji berries on the left there, which are, of course, from the Tibetan regions of modern-day China. But we do all the testing for heavy metals and glyphosate, as well as them being certified organic. So ultra clean goji berries, world-class quality, available now at healthrangerstore.com, along with many other products such as nascent iodine and also Iosat potassium iodide tablets. You know, good to get that as an emergency measure. We've got pea protein. We've got organic superfruit sea powder, which is really delicious. I use this with blended frozen bananas and frozen blueberries. You can also use freeze-dried blueberries with this, and it makes a super delicious fruit smoothie. Throw in a couple of goji berries in there, or like a small handful, and you've really boosted the nutrition, organic cacao nibs, and so much more. Check it all out at healthrangerstore.com, and we appreciate your support. Thanks for watching. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And as you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he is of a family that has suffered a lot of tragedy over many generations of assassinations and deaths. And there are death threats against Robert F. Kennedy Jr. himself right now as well. Now, an extraordinary author who we interviewed once before, named Dick Russell, who has authored a book called The Real RFK Jr. He has also previously covered the JFK assassination in a series of three books, one of which is called On the Trail of the JFK Assassins, a groundbreaking look at America's most infamous conspiracy. And so Dick Russell joins us now to talk about that assassination of JFK and so much more. Welcome to the show, Mr. Russell. It's an honor to have you back on. I really appreciated talking with you before, and I look forward to today.
So do I, Mike. Thanks for having me back again.
It's great to have you back on. So first, I just want your reaction over the fact that there was an assassination that just happened in Ecuador of a presidential candidate there. I don't recall his name, but he was more on the right of the political spectrum. Were you aware of that happening?
I just read about it, that it had happened. And of course, you know, I'm not surprised that these kinds of things are still going on. And I'm not surprised that it happened. And, you know, Ecuador is having a lot of turmoil right now. So I don't know too much about it, but I know that there's an election about to happen. And a lot of these countries, people get bumped off, sadly.
Well, yeah, I used to live in Ecuador. I've seen a little bit firsthand of some of the shenanigans that can go on around elections. But this candidate was apparently outspoken against communist China. And that's, I don't know, it's supposed that might be one of the reasons that he was taken out. But let's get to your book and JFK, the assassination of JFK, which altered the course of American history, I think, for the worse. And when we had you on last time, I believe you said that you thought that was a CIA operation, a deep state operation to carry out a political coup against the United States of America, and we've been under that coup since then. Is that sort of an accurate summary of how you think this went down?
Yeah, in a sense. I mean, I'm not saying that the CIA per se as an organization from the top did it, but I think definitely rogue CIA agents and officers working closely with the mafia and with Cuban exiles and with right-wing elements, probably international fascist elements, conspired together to assassinate President Kennedy.
And so in your books, you dismantle the official narrative, which has always been kind of a fantasy, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely a fantasy. I mean, there was a cover-up from the get-go. We had a coup d'etat in America that day. I don't think the country's ever really recovered from it. And the truth has certainly never been told. Now, I think the Warren Commission, which was the initial body that looked into this and concluded that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, I think they covered up probably for reasons different than the CIA would have. In other words, well, Alan Dulles, of course, he was the former director of the CIA, and he was on the Warren Commission. He was basically kind of the lead guy, except Earl Warren was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who Lyndon Johnson appointed to run it. But I think probably Earl Warren was told that, you know, this guy Oswald, if we really look into him, he's an agent of the Cubans and the Russians, which was not true, but we're going to have World War III. And therefore that Warren agreed to, okay, we'll just put a lid on this and go along with the fact that, yeah, this one guy got arrested and somehow managed to fire off three shots within 6.2 seconds from the sixth floor window of the Texas School Book Depository.
And now the fact that Oswald was put in play clearly indicates the premeditation of this entire thing. So not only was JFK, you know, taken out, but then they had this patsy ready to take the blame. So that really indicates a depth of the engineering of the events. And that sort of speaks to high-level intelligence involvement of some kind, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, I would. I mean, I'm sure, and more is coming out now about this, actually, through Jefferson Morley, a very fine researcher, and others, that the CIA was working an operation around the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, so-called, that Oswald had set up in New Orleans and had been using Oswald in that capacity. And there's a lot of, you know, the whole Oswald's history is so bizarre. I mean,
yeah.
You know, he's a Marine in Japan. He supposedly defects to the Soviet Union as a disgruntled ex-Marine. Was he sent over there on a mission? Most likely. Comes back 2.5 years later with a Russian wife and then immediately gets a job after being a defector in Russia, right? He gets a job with a map company, Jaggers Charles Stovall, that is actually mapping missile, you know, sites in Cuba right before the missile crisis. I mean, how does that happen?
Right.
You know, there's just so many weird things about Oswald, and he said when he was arrested that day, as people probably are my age and yours perhaps would remember, he said, "I'm a patsy, and you know, I've been set up in this deal," and which is indicating that he was not some innocent bystander, that he had intelligence connections. He was somehow there in the Texas School Book Depository that day under some kind of assignment. But there's no way that he fired the shots that killed President Kennedy.
Well, I think also to understand this history, we have to look at the context of what we now know today about how the deep state is waging war against, in particular, Donald J. Trump. Now, you know, regardless of what you or our viewers believe about Trump's policies or decisions or politics or what have you, it's clear that he is being heavily, aggressively targeted by elements of the deep state with these ongoing criminal indictments of a ridiculous nature. Oh, like you disagreed with the outcome of the election. You said the election was rigged. Well, meanwhile, there's cocaine in the Oval Office. There, you know, there's a laptop of evidence on Hunter Biden and so on. There's $20 million in funding, wire transfers and so on, received by a Hunter Biden-linked shell company. And you know, congressional committees just released that. There's no prosecutions of Democrats. There's aggressive prosecutions of Trump. Doesn't that speak to the capability of deception and the weaponization of the government against the enemies of the status quo?
Yeah, I think it does. And of course, you're seeing the same targeting right now, ironically or not, of Robert Kennedy Jr.
That's right. Because
he's a candidate for president, and they're doing everything they can to basically tar and feather him. You know, I mean, accuse him of everything from crazy to conspiracy theorist, anti-vaxxer, dangerous to the Democratic Party because he'll help get Trump elected. He's really a right winger in disguise. I mean, all this crap
right
around about him, and you know, it's so blown out of proportion, it's ridiculous. And I hope people will also pick up my book, The Real RFK Jr., to find out who the guy really is. But you know, yeah, I mean, this deep state has been around for a while, and I think it goes back. This is the 60th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination this year. There's a podcast that I'm involved in with Rob Reiner and Soledad O'Brien. It's going to be a 10-part podcast series that starts in November, looking at what really went on with the assassination of the president. I think a lot of people will find that of interest, too.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let me give out your website, dickrussell.org. And that's Russell is spelled with two S's and two L's, dickrussell.org. And I assume you'll have a link on your website to that podcast series when it's available?
I will eventually, yes.
Okay, great. I want to hear that. That's for sure. I hope you'll keep me posted. And then also, I understand you have a 60th anniversary of your book coming out here, this one, On the Trail of the JFK Assassinations, or Assassins, excuse me. Is that is it a audio coming out, or is it a printed book, or both? What is that?
I think it's going to be both. I mean, it's currently available in hardcover and paperback. Came out in 2005, I believe, and I'm going to update it a bit and add some new information. That book, unlike my first one, is a much shorter, it sort of describes my own history of investigating. I was really the first journalist on the trail, the independent journalist, looking into the reality, the truth behind who killed JFK back in the 1970s. So it's kind of my personal story. It's reprints of articles I did at that time, and then it's new information that I uncovered that wasn't in my first book, which was called The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Can you give us an example of some of the new information that has come to light, let's say in the last decade or so, that you didn't have access to when you were originally investigating this? What do we know now?
I think we know more about the fact, well, first of all, the government is still withholding a remarkable number of files that the Biden administration has decided not to release under still grounds of national security 60 years later, which is pretty absurd on the face of it.
Yes.
And you know, I think in those documents, there's going to be information about a guy named George Joannides, who was a CIA officer in Miami that worked with the Cuban exiles, who are definitely involved in the assassination of the president. All the files on Joannides are still being withheld. And then they're trying to withhold more about the Oswald's operations in New Orleans with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, because what we know now have come to realize is that the CIA was definitely targeting that group and probably using Oswald as a provocateur in order to do it. So those are some new things that have come out. We've also, there's another book that came out not too long ago, and it's about a guy, it's the diaries of Jean-Pierre Lafitte, who was a real guy, and kept a date book where he had some very cryptic but fascinating information on the people that were behind the assassination along with himself, like General Charles Willoughby, who worked closely with the H.L. Hunt Oil family, was a fervent right-winger in Texas that I first wrote about in my book, The Man Who Knew Too Much, and right-wing elements all the way, you know, to ex-Nazi Hitler people, Otto Skorzeny, over in Europe. So there's that element that ties into a conspiracy that had to be pretty vast. I don't think it involved tons and tons of people, because somebody would have probably talked, but a lot of people were killed who knew, who had inside information. And the autopsy, which we're going to look at very carefully in the Rob Reiner podcast series, I mean, all the doctors at Parkland Hospital after JFK was shot saw wounds that clearly came from the front, not behind where Oswald was. And then they fudged the autopsy completely. It was a military autopsy in Bethesda, Maryland, and it was completely, it was done by Navy guys who really weren't that experienced and would easily take orders from somebody to say, hey, you know, there's certain things we can't show in order to prove that we've got to have this guy killed from Oswald in the Texas School Book Depository, and that's the story that we're going to go with. Nobody fired from the front. And in fact, there had to be at least two more shooters from the front, from the Grassy Knoll and the South Knoll areas.
Yeah, they were going to make sure that they got their job done no matter what. You know, redundant systems, in other words, multiple shooters. You've used the term right-winger several times in describing some of the assassination elements behind JFK's assassination. And I'm wondering if that's some oil people, you know, big money oil people or military people or what. But I also want to point out that it's very interesting. I find that today, so-called right-wing people would love JFK. Because JFK was pro-America, he was, you know, he was patriotic. He was in favor of free markets and things like that. And by the way, this is why a lot of conservatives really love RFK Jr. also right now. So, isn't it interesting how the dynamics have shifted in 60 years so dramatically?
Yeah, it really is. And when I say right wing, I'm talking about extremists and, you know, in the so-called right wing. I'm not talking about regular folks who may consider themselves conservative or on the right of what's going on today in the country. So I want to make that clear. But there were extremist elements in the military who hated JFK. They felt he was betraying the country because he'd made a deal with the Russians and the Cubans after the missile crisis, where we were almost all, you know, cast into oblivion. We wouldn't be sitting here talking had Kennedy not overruled the Joint Chiefs of Staff that he was assembled there and trying to get it nuclear weapons to bomb Cuba.
Well, right, but doesn't, I mean, Kennedy, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think JFK saved all of us.
Oh, he did, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He saved us from those people.
I mean, he saved the world from nuclear annihilation.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, if I didn't make that clear, it's certainly true.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to clarify that, because it sounds like you're saying that there were people in the military who were angry that we weren't in a nuclear war.
Well, there were. There were right.
That's wild.
Right. Yeah, that's what they wanted.
Jeez,
people like, you know, that back. Remember the movie Dr. Strangelove? Well, we had those kind of people, you know, and Curtis LeMay was one of them. There were some generals that were convinced that we had to bomb Cuba back to the Stone Age, or at least, you know, get those missiles out of there. And JFK and his brother Robert Kennedy knew that if we did that, we were going to have World War III.
Yes.
And so he had a whole back channel secret correspondence going with Nikita Khrushchev, the premier of Russia at that, the Soviet Union at that time, to make sure that we came to some kind of, you know, agreement that would prevent that from happening. And then, you know, in June of 63, about, I don't know, 4 months before he was killed, JFK gave this incredible speech at American University where he talked about how we had to have peace in the world.
Oh, I know the speech you're talking about. Incredible. Probably one of the greatest speeches ever delivered.
Yeah, and it stopped nuclear testing in the atmosphere, which was going on. And also, if it had been allowed to continue, you know, we'd have been poisoned by it by now.
Yeah.
So he did that, and then they killed him. And I say they, and it was, you know, elements, I think, that are very dark elements in this country that for various reasons hated him. The mafia didn't like him because they wanted their casinos back in Cuba, and Robert Kennedy was putting a lot of those guys behind bars. The Cuban exiles on the right side were embittered because, you know, they wanted to get back into their country and wanted to get rid of Castro. And then there was the elements of the CIA and the military that and the big oil companies that were threatened by Kennedy's policies.
Well, that's an interesting mix. What do you believe is the overarching, the primary culprit behind this? I mean, who were the real movers, at least as best as you can tell from your research, that pushed this through?
You know, it had all the earmarks of an intelligence operation. So I would say, based on my research, that General Charles Willoughby, who had been Douglas MacArthur's chief of his spy master back during the Korean War and earlier, I think, in World War II, who was a MacArthur called him my little fascist. I mean, he was a
really?
Real, yeah, he was quite a, yeah, and he had connections to a lot of the ex-Nazis, many of whom, of course, had gone to work for the CIA after the war. Under Operation Paperclip.
That's right.
Enlisted their services, right? So I think it was a mastermind like Willoughby, a brilliant, you know, horrible strategist, and I guess you'd say, and of the CIA, people, Alan Dulles had been fired by Kennedy. How involved was he? We don't really know, but probably will never know. James Angleton, the chief of counterintelligence for the CIA, also couldn't stand Kennedy. I interviewed Angleton several times, and of course he tried to make it look like the Cubans and the Russians were behind it. And that was the intent by the plotters to kind of take out, you know, kill two birds with one stone, take out Kennedy and make it look like Castro did it and we'd invade Cuba.
Wow. Well, I guess it's still convenient to blame the Russians for everything because we're still seeing that in 2023 here. But it also seems like the Kennedy family has often been targeted by the establishment, even in the 1960s as well as today, because for whatever reason, the Kennedy family, they combine this charisma and leadership with also a real American patriotism. You know, I mean, you could argue this about RFK Jr.'s father as well as JFK himself and RFK Jr. himself today. I mean, they love America. They're humanitarian people. They're not arrogant. You know, I mean, you watch RFK Jr. speak today. He's not arrogant. He's essentially pleading with people to come to your damn senses.
Yeah.
Right?
I totally agree. And his, you know, in that sense, his father was, of course, a model for him, you know, and his father, similarly to what Bobby Jr. has done, you know, when he came into the race in 1968, he was challenging at the time. Lyndon Johnson was president and had not resigned. Eugene McCarthy was already challenging Johnson on the Vietnam War. And when Bobby Kennedy came into the race, nobody gave him a chance. The big media vilified him as, why is he doing this? By the summer in the California primary where he was killed right after his victory there, he was going to go on to the nomination and likely the presidency.
Yes.
And he would have reopened the investigation into his brother's death. I mean, there's no
Absolutely.
Doubt. So, you know, he was also taken out by a conspiracy. And I write about it in Real RFK Jr., how Bobby Kennedy Jr. went to visit Sirhan in prison not too long ago, the accused assassin, the convicted assassin, and also has come to the conclusion, as I have too, that Sirhan did not fire the shots that killed his father.
Wow.
That he was firing, he did hit people. He walked into that pantry, doesn't remember even walking into the pantry. Fired and hit a couple of people with bullets, but Robert Kennedy was killed from behind. He was shot in the back of the neck, and that was not Sirhan's bullet.
Yeah, sounds like an MK Ultra operation on Sirhan there.
It was. I'm sure that it was. If people know that, people recall what that was. It was an effort by the CIA, primarily. Most of those files were destroyed in 1973, but they'd been trying to develop ways to control human behavior through hypnosis and drugs for a long time.
Yes.
And, you know, that's a reality that existed and could well have been used on people like Sirhan, who was very hypnotizable.
So I'm hoping our audience fully grasps the what we're talking about here, that the America we're living in today is not the America that we were supposed to inherit. Our nation has been stolen from us. Our future has been stolen. I mean, from the 1960s to today, all of that future, I mean, that was like a fork in the road of assassinating JFK. We should have been a much more just, more abundant, more free country today in 2023, if not for that deep state, whatever, assassination of JFK. I mean, they stole our future. They stole our country. And that persists to this day, to where, again, another, you know, Bobby Kennedy, RFK Jr., is also maligned dishonestly by a media, the same media that covered up for the assassination of JFK. It's still happening.
It's still happening. And they're still covering that up, too. I mean, there's been a huge reluctance on the part of the big media to look into this, what really happened back then. Maybe they got egg on their face because they never did. But, it's been a downhill slide. I totally agree with you ever since. And it resulted, then we had Watergate with President Nixon, and some of the people involved in the Watergate burglary had been involved back with the Cuban exiles and with the assassination. And then we had later the Iran-Contra scandal and the invasion, the false invasion of Iraq based on weapons of mass destruction that were not there. I mean,
that's right.
We got into the Vietnam War on a lie because the Gulf of Tonkin, JFK was pulling out of Vietnam. And suddenly we had this Gulf of Tonkin incident where basically we faked the sinking of ships by the North Vietnamese. And then we escalated that war. So it's been a series of duplicitous acts by the government that have gone on to this day. And we need a huge change in this country. We need a peaceful revolution that Robert Kennedy Jr. is calling for.
Completely agree with you. And it seems like, in fact, I want to ask you, to what extent was JFK's anti-war stance? And it's not really that he wasn't philosophically just anti-war. He simply preferred practical peace, peace right. for the right reasons. He wasn't opposed to national defense, for example, but he wanted peace and didn't want to just drag us into endless wars. And yet today you look at the candidates that are being attacked by the media, they tend to be those who are calling for peace, including, again, RFK Jr. saying, why are we at war with Russia? Why can't we negotiate with Russia? JFK had a back channel to Khrushchev, but today there is no back channel to Putin because our State Department today, which in my opinion consists of a bunch of historically inept international bullies and fascists, they refuse to speak to anyone, including especially in Russia. And if you can't communicate, how are you ever supposed to find peace and return to trade rather than just bombing each other to death? I mean, war seems to be the big push all these generations.
It does. And you're exactly right. And that's the thing about that I always admired so much about the Kennedys was that they were willing to grow in office. That JFK came in, he was a pretty strong cold warrior, and only when we faced annihilation and our future generations too through the missile crisis did he realize that, wow, we better wake up and change this world and come to some kind of accommodation or what's it all for, and so he did. And then Robert Kennedy became a very compassionate human being after his brother's death. I mean, went through agony, you can imagine, for many months, read the Greeks, read the existentialists, and then came out of it somebody who could, when Martin Luther King was killed shortly before he could stand in front of a crowd of African Americans people were about to riot and did all over the country and address them in Indianapolis in a way that, he could calm that group and call for peace, basically. So, now Robert Kennedy Jr., I mean, he went through agony after his father's death. He became, sort of a young hippie and rode freight trains with hobos and became a drug addict for a long time. Came out the other side of that in 1983. He's been sober ever since and going to AA meetings. So, I mean, he's been there too, and these are people who have struggled in life. They didn't just live in a world of privilege that they were born into, and came to have very powerful feelings for people who didn't have what they'd had growing up. And that's why I think the Kennedy family in many ways exemplifies, for all the tragedies and all the problems that they've had, they still exemplify that, in my view.
Yeah, and I think electing Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to the White House would be the ultimate act of rebellion against the deep state and the war machine.
I think so.
It would be the way for the American people basically to give the finger to the deep state and say, no, we're going to take our country back.
Yeah.
But I would say that war and money printing are the two things that you know, they go hand in hand. They have to print money to build the machines for war. But also then war creates all these opportunities for laundering and bribery and kickbacks to those in power. Yeah. And every day it seems like Joe Biden is standing up there and saying, we need another $10 billion for Ukraine, or I think recently, today, $25 billion more for Ukraine. And when they say for Ukraine, of course, they don't mean that at all. They mean for the military-industrial complex with kickbacks to their, you know, family members of senators and State Department people and you know, regime officials and so on. So it's war and money printing. And I think wasn't the central bank fiat currency situation on the radar of JFK too before he was assassinated?
Yeah, it was. And I don't honestly recall the exact details of it, but there are some who believe that because of what he was trying to do in terms of stopping some of the Federal Reserve's policies, that's another reason he was assassinated. I honestly never looked into it that much, but I think that that definitely was a factor. And certainly what he did, he was going to cut the oil depletion allowance for companies like H.L. Hunt's oil company in Texas. That made him anathema to those folks. So he was fighting the status quo, and he was fighting, you know, for the people and for a better world. So I think his brother would have done even more, and we'd have a different country had those guys lived.
Yeah.
But they didn't, and maybe we got another shot now. I don't know.
Well, again, only if we learn the lessons of history can we avoid repeating them. And that's why your books are so important. I want to thank you for all the years of effort you've put into your books. And also, you have the 60th anniversary edition coming out. Let me plug your book one more time. It's called On the Trail of the JFK Assassins, a groundbreaking look at America's most infamous conspiracy. And you are the author, and Sean Runette is the narrator. Okay. So, folks, Dick Russell's website is dickrussell.org. And any final thoughts, Dick, before we let you go today?
No, it's been great talking to you again, Mike, you know, because I think we're on the same page about this. And interestingly, now, you know, he's being accused of being a conspiracy theorist, of course, but Robert Kennedy Jr. is out there talking about exactly what we've been talking about, and has come to the painful realization that both his father and his uncle were killed by these forces.
Yeah.
And he's not afraid to talk about it. And of course, the Biden administration has denied him Secret Service protection, which is makes
right.
you wonder too.
Well, anytime the establishment uses the term conspiracy theory, that means you're not supposed to look at this. Or when they use the label disinformation, that means you're probably speaking the truth.
Yeah. So, actually, the CIA coined the term conspiracy theory in 1967. By the way,
that's right.
So, you know, there we are.
That's right. Right. Okay, well, Mr. Russell, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for joining us today, and we hope you'll join us again. And please keep us posted about your podcast series coming up. Did you say September or November? What was that?
It's going to come out in November, shortly before the 60th anniversary. Yeah.
Okay, great. So let us know about that. Yeah, in November, and we'll spread the word for you about that and connect people to that. And thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Great, Mike. Thanks so much. Really good to be with you.
You too. All right. Take care. All right, folks, that's Dick Russell, author of multiple books on these subjects, including The Real RFK Jr., his most recent book, if you want to check that out. Of course, I'm Mike Adams of Brighteon.com, and I want to encourage you to share this interview. You can find it also on Rumble and on BitChute and other platforms as well, because Brighteon.com links are still banned by Twitter. I wonder why that is. Links to the military-industrial complex, perhaps? Well, we'll never know. But thank you for watching today. God bless you all. God bless America. Take care.